Welcome home. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. We call this Magic Baltimore Positive.com. We are into the magical time of the year. I have the Magic 8-Ball scratch off still left. Handful of these before we get to the Back to the Future. Could be said something about our presidency, but I'll save that for the later. We are going to be having the NFL draft later on this month. Luke is attending the Liars Luncheon. So in between all of this baseball, all of the political nonsense we're dealing with in crab cakes and all the stuff that we're doing over at Costas this week, we'll be doing at Beaumont next week and Cooper's North and Coco's later on in the month for the crab cake tour. It's always football season here. And even though I mean, all I've talked about is Justin Tucker and Ben Cleveland and Bisciotti and Harbaugh counting their money while being interviewed by one of their frightened employees at the owners' meetings. It has been a little bit of a respite for me. There was no Combine and Indy for me this year. There was no Super Bowl, but there was a Cup of Super Bowl where we featured charities. And there was no NFL owners' meetings for me last week as well. I've been off the beat a little bit. I used to run into this guy at several of these locations. Sometimes he had a guitar with him with Doug Farrar and other rock and rollers. He hails from Joe Flacco, pronounced Joe Flacco down here in his hometown. He is somewhere in the swamps of Jersey. He was Joe Flacco's geometry teacher at one point in high school up in Haddonfield, New Jersey, and Audubon, as I know how to say it, at exit three. We welcome in a defending champion of all things football, analytics, the run and shoot, the choke and puke offense, and now a draft captain. Mike Tenier is here. How are you? Happy football season, I guess. They'll gather a quarter of a million strong for the NFL draft here in a couple of weeks, and they'll paint Lambeau up, I'm sure. It's football season, even though it feels like baseball. We've done a lot of baseball here, Mike. I'm happy to have you on. Tell me something good.
How are the Orioles doing? I have no idea. The Phillies are doing pretty well. How are the Orioles doing?
Sub 500 as I sit here right now, in
Okay.
need of pitching, in need of more consistent bats, in need of consistent defense, and in search of bullpen help.
Sounds
Yeah,
like status quo, in other words, down there.
it's early. It's April. You know, we had many years here where we didn't really have baseball, right? Like where you knew they couldn't win. So
Right.
anytime we have a new owner, you know, I'm still banned in the media. I'm writing a letter to Katie Griggs this week, which is absurd. But the football thing and the beat that goes on, the Ravens are one of these stable places where they don't have quarterback turmoil that they have in Pittsburgh. They don't have who are they going to draft? Who are they going to get their draft in 27th? They are hiding with their tails between their legs because they haven't won the Super Bowl. And they've been a January disappointment, right? I mean, and Lamar didn't even get the MVP this year, and he probably deserved it. But all of that sort of shh quells down, and then this Justin Tucker thing blows up. They go and sign their sixth offensive lineman that blew a double deuce on the meter with the DUI thing. They've had a really weird offseason where they're kind of hiding, but they're really good. And guys like you that know football think that, you know, if you had a dollar, you'd bet it on them to win the Super Bowl because they're good at this. They are. They're good at drafting. They're good at all of this.
They're good at all this. They're good at the succession game. They're good at taking care of promotions from within. They took care of their business with Ronnie Stanley. The Tucker thing is like sort of a black mark on what they're doing right now. But you're right, they're hiding. They're hiding behind the NFL's coattails on that. They'll probably grab some sort of late round kicker, et cetera. Yeah, this is a team that when you do the analytics, they're like, well, this is one of the two or best three best teams in the NFL come January. I'm going to be honest, I forget how the Ravens choked this year. I'm talking to you right now. I can't bring up an image.
Mark Andrews dropped the ball twice. And yeah, you know,
That was it. That was it.
and I had actually, I was up in Buffalo last week. I had dinner with the two young men that created a GoFundMe that raised $150,000 for diabetes based on the Mark Andrews thing. And honestly, I've given more oxygen to Mark Andrews since that moment. And he ducked out on the media, what's left of the media in Buffalo, hasn't really been heard from since. He had a little Instagram thing. But you know, most of the Ravens news has been not such good news. And even signing Ronnie Stanley at what feels like a discount at this point, I don't know that that solves their offensive line issues or ailments. They're still going to come back with a freight train running back, an all-world quarterback, an offense that got a lot done last year and has weapons, a defense that has Roquan Smith, Marlon Humphrey, Kyle Hamilton, one of maybe the top 10 defensive players in the game, and an emerging player. And they have this brain trust. They signed Pagano. They have all of this good stuff. But to your point, you're running from your kicker being a serial predator, potentially, maybe, who
Right.
knows? You didn't win. You didn't win. You want Mike Tenier to forget how you didn't win, right? I mean, I was in Buffalo last week. They didn't win either.
Right. But that's fresh in my mind because they find new ways. It just kind of felt like this is the Ravens season. Here we come into the big game in the end where we lose. This time it was Mark Andrews. In the past, it's been other guys. That's what happens. You're right in terms of the hiding. I mean, I was there at the combine when the GM goes up and gives a speech. And they kind of start with the Tucker thing, and it's like, we're shutting the Tucker thing down. We are not going to give you anything except, well, this is the NFL's investigation. And if you ask us again, we'll tell you again. Sounds like they took the same approach down in the winter meetings. I was not there. Very solvable problem, in my opinion. You suspend them or you cut them. Very, very solvable, very simple. But they refuse to do that. That's weird. Now you're right.
Well, he's going to kick again in the league, Mike, right? I mean, he's going to kick again. He's not done kicking. And if he's going to kick, why not kick for them?
Well, he'll probably get put on the commissioner's exempt list. That's part of it. The problem, there's a couple problems, and one of them is that we don't know, based on what we've heard so far, there might be more explosive allegations coming. There might be more explicit allegations coming. Based on what we've heard so far, you have to think that that's a problem. The Ravens were through this. The Ravens played this game 12 years ago with Ray Rice. Is that the direction that this team wants to go in with a kicker coming off an off season, an off year, where you can simply
Well, they're
say,
going through it right now. We're still sitting here talking about it
That's
8 weeks
true.
later, right? I mean,
Right.
and that's the point. That's crazy that if they wanted him to not be their kicker anymore, he wouldn't be their kicker right now, right?
Right.
And
This
they
week's
would make a
tough.
public statement, say after June 1, they would do whatever they do. The fact that they are, they're doing Tammy Wynette here and George Jones, they're standing by their man. They really are.
Right. Which is disturbing. Now, maybe it makes some football sense, or maybe this becomes a situation where they play the game with this. And then in July or August, Goodell says, okay, 12 game, 15 game, indefinite suspension, whatever. No one's wishing for this to happen. But here come the details. Well, here comes a new allegation.
Well, this is where the NFL investigation becomes a punchline, Mike. If the NFL, I know stuff about the Tucker thing. I know stuff inside their building I shouldn't know. That's terrible. That's awful. I'll say that out loud. And if the NFL investigators knocked on my door and said, "Tell me what you know," I'd say, "What are you going to do about it? If I told you anything really awful that happened, you'd hide it. That's what you do. You'd lie about it. That's what you do. That's what the NFL, every NFL investigation has ended with an oral report or some private thing that they didn't see. And we're going to hand down a look over there. We find somebody." Like, I watch what they did. I watch what they've done to my career. I own an FCC license. I'm a media member. They've tried to portend that I'm not a media member anymore, or that somehow I did something to. I mean, they're sleazy people in a general sense, and the investigation part of whatever it is a punchline to me. It is a punchline.
There are sleazy people who often hand down for things like this 12-game suspensions, often hand down suspensions of that. That was what Deshaun Watson got. So there are sleazy people who will sometimes hand these things down. So you need a plan B either way. Now, granted, the plan B can be whatever, it's kicker, it's different. I just don't know what they benefit from getting from this. And this is where I have to bifurcate me as a human being saying, I don't want to see this guy anymore. I don't want to hear from him. I think it's bad at a very human level. And somebody who works for FTN and works for Aaron Schatz and says, okay, we plug in this level of kicker for this team and they're going to win 13 games if they have him for those 13 games, if they don't have a suspension. And that's where we have to balance this. Like, what are we talking about here? Real life or over-unders?
Well, I mean, that would be the same case for Deshaun Watson or for any, they rinse their hands of Ray Rice right away. 12 years ago, they've been running. Bisciotti's been running from Ray Rice ever since. He ran from me on the veranda this time last year at the owners' meetings, and they don't want to take any of this on, which is why it's so peculiar to me. And I keep saying, and I said to my wife 2 months ago, I'm like, he's done. And I remember she looked at me, my wife looked at me, and she's like, "But he's a really good kicker."
Yeah, he is
And
a kicker.
that's always the he's going to kick again in the league for someone. And I'm thinking, if it's them, why not us? You let them boo us. They booed us before. If they were zero tolerance, they wouldn't have signed Ben Cleveland 3 weeks after he got arrested. You know what I mean?
That's orders of magnitude, and there's a little bit of apples and oranges to that sort of thing. We have DUIs all over the league. It's something we manage. This is something on the Deshaun Watson level of you're going to bring in national scrutiny. You're going to bring in the people that Biscotti doesn't want to deal with. With Ray Rice, it was suddenly he's out there facing questions from national media, from news media, from CNN people. Be more comfortable with you and Jameson and like six people hanging around the center down
No, he
there.
didn't like my questions, I assure you. He
But
didn't, you know.
it's a small group down there in Owings
But
Mills.
I'm also the only one that ever bought tickets. I paid for my tickets, so I feel like I had a right to ask questions. Mike Tenier is here. I ask him questions. He asks a lot of questions. See, is this where it is when you're in Philadelphia and you win a Super Bowl? You just forget what happened to everybody else along the way, all the other pains.
No, not necessarily. I remember what happened to the Lions. I remember what happened to the Vikings. I remember what happened to the Bills. It's just that the Ravens is like turned into this mush at this point. And it's like, okay, and then they look like they were the team to beat in the playoffs, and then something happened, and I just lost track of the something this time.
Well, there you go. The something is that they're picking the pieces up from all of this from a much better position. Evaluate the draft a little bit for me and what we're trying to do here in a general sense for the places that are trying to find quarterbacks and figuring out what's going to happen the first hour of the draft, which is always the highest drama in a couple of weeks amongst the worst teams and how they get better.
Well, that's two different stories because the evaluation of the draft is really good defensive draft, good at defensive tackle, good at your edge rusher positions, really good at corner, pretty good at safety, okay at linebacker, all of that. On offense, it's heavy in running backs and tight ends. So when you hear that, you say, well, who's going to get drafted at the top? Because the top of the draft is usually quarterbacks, which this draft is very weak in, wide receivers, which this draft is extremely weak in, left tackles, which I don't think there's a really good one in the draft class, frankly. And then, yeah, the edges, the top edges and corners go in there. So you might see teams at the top doing the things that people are anticipating, reaching for Shedeur Sanders. And Shedeur Sanders is a reach if he goes in the top 10, 100%. Reaching for wide receivers like Tre'Torius McMillan out of Arizona State, who would be a reach at that point, because these teams sort of instinctively, reflexively wind up drafting for need. The smarter ones might try to draft to trade down, but who's going to trade up? If they say, well, if we stand where we are, we can get a Pro Bowl defensive tackle, Pro Bowl safety if we stand where we are. So it's going to be high drama in those first 10, 11 picks when these teams like the Giants, Jets, put up or shut up mode. What are you going to do? Are you going to reach a quarterback? What are you going to do? And then we don't know because these teams are unpredictable by nature because they're bad teams that are always doing something crazy.
Well, the thing we do with the draft around here, especially in the Ravens seat, is say 27-27. Could be anybody. And when they get to that point in the draft, they tend to trade. Because 27 and 38 doesn't feel all that different. They got players that they sort of rank the same way. That's the thing about the Ravens offseason when they perform like this and they're a flop in January and then they have really, this sizzling thing going on with Tucker and the offseason and where they are. The Stanley thing and bolstering that doesn't preclude them from taking their left tackle of the future. There's a lot of directions the Ravens can go in. And I know one thing, there's no organization that does it the way they do it and the way they've had one system ever, and they're in their 30th year right now. One system ever.
One system ever in their 30th year, and that makes it so when they go out there and say, what kind of edge rusher do we want? What kind of left tackle do we want? Everyone knows the answer. Scouting department, personnel department, Harbaugh, his assistants, they all know the answer because the answer has been, hasn't, it's changed. It changes over the years, but they all change together. So you don't get these situations where you might get with the Bears where a scout's like, well, wait, what does Ben Johnson want? We don't know that. What does Glenn want? The Jets scouts might not necessarily have that communicated. That's to their advantage. You talk about a team that trades down. I think there's going to be teams trading down at that level because they say, well, there's nobody here we really want. Can we just get a pick next year? Even if we go down 10 spots, we'll still get one of the guys on this tier. If you're looking for an offensive tackle of the future, there you've got guys where you say, well, here's a guy with the traits. I'm thinking of Josh Connerly out of Oregon. Here's a guy with the traits. Probably isn't ready. If you put him out there this year, he's going to get beaten. If you let him train behind Stanley, bulk up, learn more technique, and be good. Those are the kind of things the Ravens can do. And as you know, I think the Ravens have like four sixth round picks. They can play all kinds of goofy games.
Oh yeah, and move up too, right? I mean,
They can
if
move up with
somebody's at
that.
21 that they feel like was in their top 10, they can move up too. And I think from that perspective, they don't do it often, but if they see a player in an acute need, and I often think like, where are their acute needs? And it feels like wide receivers always something that I'm open-minded to. Pass rusher is something that they haven't been particularly great at, acquiring, and the Terrell Suggs thing notwithstanding, they've tried on Oweh, they've tried on a variety of different sort of mid-round linebacker types, but just finding a player or two. I mean, they grabbed Kyle Hamilton, who's turned out to be sort of a generational player for them. I mean, they're still very, very good at picking football players. They really are.
They are, and doing the draft and develop game, putting the guy on the bench behind Stanley for a year, putting a guy behind somebody else for a year. And as you get down to like 19, 20, 21, if you look at moving up, there's a possibility. Cornerback Maxwell Hairston out of Kentucky, big, long guy, could probably start pretty quickly in the NFL. That's kind of a need for him. He's there. He probably wouldn't be there by the time you get to 27. They need a safety across from Hamilton. There are guys, I don't know how long Xavier Watts of Notre Dame stays in this draft class, but he could still be there. Nick Emmanwori, who's an absolute specimen out of South Carolina, looks like an edge rusher, plays like a safety. He could be there. There's a guy you can team with Hamilton, and they could be doing all kinds of things. Those are the kind of guys. I wouldn't count on them being there at 27, but there's somebody at 22, 23. You make the move for that because you can move up a couple slots based on the capital you have later in the draft.
Well, and also based on whether they love the kid or not, right? I mean, they have been famous for toeing the line on where their value is, not what Mel Kiper was doing or what Joe Bushbaum was doing 30 years ago or what anybody on the internet's doing. They have their system, and they have been quick to strike. And I don't think anybody's used the capital they have within the organization. And I mean, sandwich picks by allowing players to go to market, inviting them to go sign and make as much money as they can in other places, that they've backfilled a lot of mid-round picks, whether it's Mark Andrews, Orlando Brown, those kinds of picks that have wound up being really great value third and fourth round draft picks for them. Those picks aren't wasted in the 80 to 140 range for them.
No, they aren't. I remember a couple of years ago, they must have had like five or six third round picks. I'm trying to think of the year. I don't have it with me, but like a lot of those guys we picked in third, fourth round supplemental are still on the roster. They're starters. You probably have to go back to like 21, 21 or 20, 22, but you'll just see pick after pick after pick that they made in the third round. This one's a little different because they don't have as much supplemental firepower. It's more of a sixth round situation. You can still use those kind of picks to move up a pick, move up one or two slots, maybe package them with a third rounder because you don't have the need right now to fill out your whole roster. Have you found it? Have you found what I was
Yeah,
what
well,
I'm
Ben Cleveland, Brandon Stevens, and Tylan Wallace all went between 94 and 131. They've all obviously made a nice history in the league. They had all of those fourth round picks a couple years ago.
That's what I'm
Travis
thinking of.
Jones, Daniel Faialele,
Yes.
Jalen Armour Davis, Charlie Kohler,
Omar,
Jordan
likely.
Stout, Isaiah Likely, Damarrion Williams. Yes, that was the 22 draft that happened. 23, they didn't have a lot of picks. They took Zay Flowers in that draft. And then, last year still. I mean, Rosengarten got in right away. Nate Wiggins is a guy you mentioned maybe getting another corner, but they still have a whole like back line of players, that they like, depth guys that they like, and they hide a little bit.
Right, that's it. That's the way they operate. And yeah, I'm looking last year, they did have two fourth rounders. They tend to be in that
Well,
position.
TJ Tampa got hurt. He's a cornerback as well. Mike Denier is here. I want to reset. Mike, tell me what you're doing these days because everybody knows you in the analytics world. Everybody knows you through my pal Aaron Schatz as well. What are you doing these days?
Well, it's called the Two Deep Zone. It is a Substack. It is NFL content for people who find regular NFL content a little boring. I like to think of it as a micro distillery. You come in, you want to get your charcoal barrel aged fine drinks as opposed to just getting your I don't want to name a sponsor here or anything like that.
That's
Getting
okay.
your regular domestic drinks. You come to the Two Deep Zone. What I'm working on, we're in draft mode right now, and what I have is a project called the Two Deep 96. I'm going through the who I think are the first three rounds worth of prospects in this draft. I'm doing profiles of them. These aren't scouting reports where I sit and talk about his footwork and his hand placement and whether his elbow goes here or here and all that other goofy stuff that when I read a draft guy, the second sentence, I just want to throw it away. Talking a little bit about the individual, talking about his college history. Maybe if I know something about his favorite video game or something, that gets into play here. And we talk about my sense of where they should be as a prospect, based on the fact that yes, I do watch tape, I do watch film. Yes, I do a lot of stats. So 2Deep96, it's ongoing every day. I put four or five new players up there, and you can find it at miketanier.substack.com.
I think the hardest part of the draft for me, being an older person now, I'm 56. I've attended 15 combines. I mean, more than anybody should. I have sat in war rooms and talked to all of these people that have dispersed through the league in regard to philosophy and X's and O's and Jimmy's and Joe's. I was introduced to your whole tree of people through Jim Schwartz when I got to meet Aaron Schatz maybe 20 years ago before the words analytics were even a thing in
Right.
football. And I. All of the analytics, all the measurables, and I talk so much about golf and baseball because Masters Week and watching baseball with spin rate and all of what the Orioles try to do. The hardest part, and this goes back to before Eric DaCosta started lying to me, when he back when he told me the truth, which is it's an art form to some degree. And I think the one thing from the very, very beginning of time, and Mike, I say this from my heart from 30 years ago. Oh, Phil Savage has been my friend for a long time. And and Phil and I are still close 30 years later. He was running the Jets 10 minutes ago. Last I texted with him in the Senior Bowl, the Reese Senior Bowl, excuse me, down there in Biloxi and Fairhope and all those
Fairlawn.
places. Yeah, all that.
No,
Yeah,
Fairhope. Yeah, Fairhope.
Mobile. And
Yes.
so, but nonetheless, the notion that this franchise, my franchise, the Ravens, not mine, Steve's franchise, walked away from Lawrence Phillips and drafted John Ogden.
Yeah.
Lawrence Phillips showed everything he needed to show on tape to be a running back, right? There's this part where the nerds like you look at the hips and the elbows and the measurables and the numbers and what he did. I think the bigger thing for all of these organizations now is getting security in, scrubbing their Instagram, looking at whatever they can do to figure out what they're going to get in the building. And I think the Justin Tucker thing is a glaring spotlight for them and on Royal Farms Chicken, by the way, who went out in front of Justin Tucker, that all of the measurables and all that we see in Indianapolis and all of that, there's definitely a part of this where nobody wants another Aaron Hernandez.
Well, that's absolutely true. And one of the things is when you're doing this, especially from a media standpoint, you don't know. And you
You
can't
don't
know.
know.
And when you think you find out something, it could be a rumor, it could be something that has been blown out of proportion, it could be a one-time thing on the individual's character sheet. So, I have to work very much personally in tangibles. Mike Green from Marshall said that he had two accusations of sexual misconduct against him, one in high school, one in college. According to him, they have never been tried. There's never been an actual, arrest made, anything like that. Those are the facts. I can put them out there, but I can't say, well, obviously he's this or that. We can't do that. That's
Or
not
say the Bears are willing to overlook that in the third round, but not the second round, right? Because
And
that, Phil would always tell me there were red flags, there were, purple stars that they put on players, and then there were just sort of the black mark to say we're not taking that kid, we're just not bringing that kid into our building. And the Ravens have brought in some delinquent humans over the course of time, some before, during, and after, and the zero tolerance policy. I mean, they just signed a guy who's been a complete flop on the field, who got a DUI, and they went out and gave a bunch of money to say, we need to keep you around because we lost our other six man signed elsewhere. Somebody else gave more money in Jacksonville.
And like a DUI is an example of it. I can't remember the young man's name, but there's one with a DUI in there. And it's like, well, it was a DUI at 18 or 19. There, but for the grace of God, go I or a lot of other people. So how do you evaluate that? So they do these other things where they go in and they try to investigate the player. And then, whatever they decide, they decide. That's a black box that we don't see into. I do try to look at these
Well,
players.
nobody wanted Randy Moss. He was a pain in the ass. He went to the Hall of Fame.
And what happens if it's like, well, what we found out is that this kid argues with his coach a bunch of times. It's like, well, maybe his coach is an idiot. Or maybe, or maybe the kid really is just like incorrigible in a certain way.
Or 5 minutes before the draft, they show a kid with a gas mask on, do a bong hit. Then now everybody's on gummies in the league, right? And right, I mean,
A couple of years later, it's all legal, and I could be doing bong hits after I get off here, and no one's going to say
and
anything.
he might be going to the Hall of Fame, Tunsil. Who knows, right?
But like, we got one like the. I also try to look at things because you talk about we get too myopic. If we're looking at stats and EPA and elbows and knees and wrists and things like
Because I
that.
think the teams don't, they like all of that, but I do think there's an intangible part of who the human being is that is really everything when you manage humans at the end of the day.
And but we can also look at things like, okay, Missouri wide receiver Luther Burton, who has a pretty good on-field record, looks like a really good on-field player, great yak, great potential. He had like, I don't know how many unsportsmanlike conduct penalties. There's situations where you see him having an unsportsmanlike conduct penalty and kind of like jawing with his coach and then on the sidelines doing this afterwards. And it's like, well, I have to put that in the profile. I'm not going to say, well, he shouldn't be in the NFL or this, that, or the other thing. But if I'm talking to you about who is Luther Burden and what kind of ball player he is, and all I do is talk about yak, and I don't talk about him like showing up his quarterback when he didn't get the ball on the sidelines. That's an important thing. There's another one, Shamar Turner out of Texas A&M, I think it is, defensive lineman. A bunch of personal fouls, a bunch of spearing penalties, roughing penalties, got into a fight before the game at one point. This is part of who the kid is. The NFL knows this, okay? And they're making their decisions. And some coach might be like, hey, he's tough. I like him. And another coach might be saying, I'm worried this kid has no idea when the whistle blows,
I
but.
had an hour-long conversation when the Ravens dealt for Terrell Owens, who was in the league and was a special player. We all know what Terrell Owens, a Hall of Famer. And I remember having this pacing conversation with Billick on the phone where he was telling me, we're going to absorb him. We've got Ray, we've got Dion, we've got all these, but we're going to absorb him. He couldn't. By the time I get off the phone, he had already shat upon Ozzie Newsome and figured out how to get out of the, you remember that fiasco with the Eagles and all that?
I remember
And
the Eagles. I don't remember the Ozzie Newsome one. Oh yeah, where he catches
yeah,
the
when
thing.
the
He forced
whole
the
thing
thing.
went down,
He
remember?
forced the trade, yes.
Oh, right, right, exactly. And not going back 22 years now, 21 years, whatever it was. And all I can remember is how giddy Billick was because he thought we can fix him. Because every coach thinks they can fix these guys. They do.
And sometimes the right answer is, you're Dan Campbell. I can do this. You're going to try. Okay, have a plan. Sometimes you have no plan. Sometimes you're the Jets or the Browns, and you're just like, well, it'll solve itself. Or, I'm such a great leader of men because I was an offensive coordinator for 1 year. Like you're not. So maybe you say we're going to pass on these guys. There's no one right answer because each of these guys is uniquely different. You don't know what they're going to be like when they get money. You don't know what they're going to be like when they get better coaching. You don't know what they're going to be like when they have a baby. You don't know some of these things. In T.O.'s case, it's also, well, it's worth a try because look at the guy.
Right. That's what every coach would say, right?
And for some teams, the answer was for the Eagles for 1 year, it was worth a try. Then another year, it wasn't. Then for the Cowboys for a year, it was worth a try. You have to ask yourself, okay, Luther Burden, he ain't T.O. Okay, but he's also not. Out there, he's accused of being a pain in the ass on the field, not like crime. So what's your
Most wide receivers in the league are accused of being a pain in the ass, right? Over the history of
Stephon
time.
Diggs is a bigger pain in the ass than anybody, and he's getting older. And the Patriots put a bunch of money in front of him, and like, oh, Vrabel's going to keep him under control. Is he? Is he though, or is it? Or are we going to get another hamstring injury that lasts 6 months? What are we going to see here?
Hey, the Ravens gave $15 million to a washed-up wide receiver to make the quarterback happy a couple years ago because he had his posters on the wall.
They just did it again with DeAndre Hopkins. So,
Correct. Yeah, I mean it is something. Mike Tenier is here. He is the run and shoot gangster. He is. Tell everybody where to find you, how to subscribe. Give me the whole lowdown because nobody knows football like you and your crew do, really.
you want to subscribe? First of all, you can go to any of the links on my Blue Sky. You can find me on Blue Sky now at Mike Tenier, or you can go to miketenier.substack.com or just Google all that stuff. You will find me. Very easy to subscribe. You become a free subscriber, you get a big chunk of it. A paid subscription, $8 a month. You get the whole thing, and you'll get pre-draft coverage, post-draft. You'll get draft grades the way I do draft grades. We have a historical series right now. You can find out the all-time top five quarterbacks on just about every team. I just did the Rams today because I'm tired of drafts. So I talked about the Rams all-time top five quarterbacks. And you can go find all these.
Kurt Warner,
Number one, Kurt Warner. Who's number
John
two?
Hadle.
No, he didn't quite crack the top 10.
Well, I know Pat Hayden and
No.
Vince Ferragamo aren't going to be
No,
here.
these are good choices. Oh, Roman Gabriel. How about that
Oh,
Roman?
Roman Gabriel, of course.
How
Has
about
to be.
that Matthew Stafford who led the team to the Super Bowl 3 years ago? He's got to make that list.
I'm so confused with the old Rams and the Fred Dreyer and the new Rams and
Yeah.
the St. Louis Rams, and now the old Rams are the new Rams, and they've gone back and they actually won. I witnessed them winning the Super Bowl in their own stadium, let alone, right?
That's the thing. There's so many Rams because, yeah, you have those 70s teams, and then you have the greatest show teams, which are St. Louis, and then you have the modern team. Well, I wrote about 1,000 words on like the 1950s Rams because I was writing about Bob Wooderson and Norm Van Brocklin's sex lives.
Nice. There you go, man. You know,
Guys are 50s guys.
that's the way you do real NFL history, real pro football history. Mike Tenier, my run and shoot gangster, and one time math teacher to Joe Flacco. Flacco did the show a couple weeks ago. He's going to play again. He said to me, he's never going to retire, right, Mike?
He was almost there. He was quasi-retired when the Browns pulled him out, and he played well enough last year for the Colts to continue this mentoring. So we'll see when his kids get a little older. When his kids get a little older, I have a funny feeling he's going to want to be there a little bit more. But why stop now?
He moved them out to Indianapolis. They had the time of their lives. He sat here and told me all about it, glowing. He's just having one big party
Amazing.
through life playing football, you know? And he doesn't like anything else. He's not interested in anything else. And
Right.
that's why he wants to play football. So
Right, right.
God bless him.
I can't imagine moving from beautiful South Jersey out to Indianapolis and loving it, but hey, he might have found the perfect neighborhood out there.
You know, when they came and stole our football team 40 years ago, we used to say, that's a friendly heart of the Midwest out there in Indianapolis. Friendly Indianapolis. Mike Tenier, I used to run into him in the little Hobbit trails on 5 degree mornings in Indianapolis out at the Underwear Olympics. He is resting comfortably somewhere up in the swamps of Jersey, getting ready for all things NFL draft. We're going to try to keep you informed of all things. The Liars Luncheon is the 15th. Luke will be out in Owings Mills for that. They don't allow me around anymore because I don't like liars. It is a baseball season around here. I have a Dear Katie Griggs letter going out this week, and we have been trying to uphold democracy. No one trying harder than my friend Mike Tenier, who's out on the front lines against
Against you name
evil.
it, evil. Let's call it evil.
Just
Let's
evil. I just leave it at that. Mike, keep up the good work out there. I will be following you on social media. And at some point, you and I should convene at the Mann Theater up on the hill in Philadelphia for some proper rock and roll this summer. If I think I'm going to make an invitation to you for that, for something. We got to figure something we can agree on.
we got to figure something out. You know, all the acts we really, really love are getting a little older. They're going from the Mann to like Atlantic City and places like that. We got to find something.
Could have taken you up to the Keswick to see the Fix last night, but that's another story
That's right. They
altogether.
were
So,
at the Fix, yeah.
yeah, it was pretty good. I've never been to the Keswick. Then I saw it was a movie theater, and I'm like, I'm going to see him at Wolf Trap next week. Rock and roll soon, you and me, Mike Tenier up in Philadelphia, crowing about the Eagles of big victory up there on the Jersey side. I am Nestor. We are WNSD, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. We never stop talking. Baltimore positive.